Hi everyone, it's Jeremy. Just a quick editor's note before this episode. Throughout the episode, we refer to the game alternately as Dragon Warrior and Dragon Quest, but we never explain that. If you don't know, originally in Japan, the game was called Dragon Quest, but there was a pen and paper RPG by that name in the United States. So when Nintendo of America brought it over, they decided they didn't want to go through the legal hassle and changed the name to Dragon Warrior. However, when Square Enix decided to bring Dragon Quest over again in the 2000s and try to get Americans to play it again, they changed the name back to Dragon Quest. If you want to find it on Android or iOS or anywhere today, searching Dragon Quest is probably your best bet, but we refer to it as each. Thank you. Enjoy the episode. It's Thursday, July 28th, 2016, and you're listening to Last Time on Video Games, the show about retro video games and sometimes some other stuff. You're listening to episode 154, Dragon Quest Warrior Z. Runtime for this episode is 58 minutes. Hello, and welcome to Last Time on Video Games, the podcast that bought Dragon Warrior 3 because they liked Dragon Ball Z. My name is Jeremy.
Literally my only experience with the franchise is Fortune Street. I'm Tyler.
My mind has completely abandoned me. I guess I forgot it. My name is Zach.
Alternatively, you're cultivating slime molds in your basement?
Probably.
Man, there's got to be a terrible Dragon Warrior mobile phone game in Japan, right?
Yes, although if you consider the first one a terrible game, it's on the phone now, so...
Fair enough.
But it's not a phone game.
That is true, yeah. It's not a game developed specifically for phones.
I'm thinking of a waiting game, specifically, like a...
Kind of like Diner Dash.
Yeah.
Except Dragon Warrior.
Yeah.
Where people are like, I want a red slime. Yep. I want a golden slime. Man, I'm so... Slime Rancher version 0.4 is almost out. I'm really excited.
Yeah, so this week we're talking about one of the most important games in video game history, Dragon Quest / Dragon Warrior. Pick your poison. Probably going to interchange
definitely them. Poison.
No, I meant which. What do you want to call this poison? A poison by any other name would be as acrid. That's a Shakespeare quote, right?
Oh, yeah, definitely. That's why everyone dies of ear poison in all of his plays.
I feel like Juliet dies of mouth poison.
Actually, Juliet dies of a dagger through the ribs.
Oh, okay.
Romeo dies to mouth poison.
Although, wait, no, I thought Romeo also died of a dagger. Juliet took mouth poison, but it was only temporary mouth poison, and then sees dead Romeo and then daggers.
I thought he poisoned himself, and then she took his dagger and poisoned.
I know someone poisons themselves after the fake poisoning.
Okay, well, it's probably Romeo then.
And nobody makes it out but Horatio.
Only to die after moving to Denmark.
No, that's a... MC Frontalot has a song about spoilers, and one of the lines is, nobody make it out except Horatio.
Put down your swords, 9mm.
Yeah, that was a remarkably good adaptation. I don't think that one got enough credit.
I really don't like the way it starts with, like, the news coverage. And, like, the recasting of the king as, like, a news anchor. Not a fan of that. But you're right. It gets more crap than it deserves.
Although at the time it was like I had this irrational hatred of Leonardo DiCaprio, and I don't know why.
See, have you seen the Kenneth Branagh adaptation of Much Ado About Nothing?
I've not, but this
Keanu
sounds
Reeves
awesome.
Plays John the Bastard. John Stamos plays the male lead. Yeah, Denzel Washington plays Don Pedro. And like there's someone else big in it too.
I think you've told me about this, and this sounds
obviously
great.
Kenneth Branagh, who's Benedict.
Although Keanu Reeves just seems like the outlier here.
Yes, John the Bastard, though. And like he's like just so intense in all his life. He seems like your asshole brother, which is who that character is. So it works perfectly.
You've got a brother?
Yeah.
I do, yeah.
He's an asshole.
Have you ever met
him? That's why we don't hang out with him.
Yeah, that's why I don't talk about him.
Ah.
He's an asshole.
He's always trying to get him to break up with his wife for no reason.
He's always trying to steal my lucky charms.
So, Zach, who's been trying to steal your lucky charms in video games?
Tyler.
Yeah, I have, actually.
So this weekend, they actually released Shen's Last Gift, which was the third piece of DLC for XCOM 2 that I had actually pre-bought by getting the season pass, which actually did better than a lot of season passes. because when the season pass released when XCOM 2 came out, they said, this is what you get with the season pass.
Yeah, which is a great idea. Or I guess it's better for the consumer. Who's Shen?
Shen is your engineer.
Okay.
His daughter is actually your engineer in XCOM 2, because he apparently died in between 1 and 2.
You know, he was old. There were aliens.
He actually was old. But in that one, you actually get robots. Like, you can get another unit that is basically the mecha unit from XCOM 1, but it's a totally autonomous robot.
That's pretty sweet. That's actually something I'm surprised that humans in XCOM didn't develop sooner.
At least in XCOM 2, you're on the run, so it's much harder. And they're actually fairly expensive to build. But I tried playing through it on Iron Man, and I also had the other DLC where you got alien weapons, and the alien kings exist on that level. And the kings are incredibly powerful special versions of the aliens. They go every time you take an action.
Do they also go when you're not, on the alien turn?
Yes.
What?
This is why I ended up having to quit, because initially, I lost a low-level demolitions or a low-level explosives expert to the Viper King, Tyler.
Yeah, well, I was a demo guy?
Yeah.
Yeah, I would be a demo guy.
And then later on, I took severe casualties when I had to fight the Archon King, who ended up killing Jeremy, Kevin, and me. After I got through a fight, like, I finally managed to kill the thing, and I had my elite sniper and my elite assault left, and then a whole bunch of rookies, basically. So I had to quit because I didn't have the supplies or the personnel to keep going.
Yeah, what actually happens in-universe when XCOM is just like, screw it, aliens win.
Aliens win. Humanity ceases to exist.
In XCOM 2, aliens already won and you're the resistance.
Yeah, I guess what are aliens doing with the planet that there needs to be a resistance? I assume something.
They are basically creating, I can't think of it off the top of my head, but they're working on something that will basically result in the wiping out of humanity.
Oh, well.
But one of the fun things that I discovered is in the DLC with the aliens, alien kings in it, you get a bunch of special gear that are unique, and you can't replicate them. One of them is a grenade.
Okay, it's a unique, unreplicatable grenade. Just one?
Yes.
Okay.
But every time you throw it, you get it back.
It's a boomer nade?
It's just a matter of, you can't build more to equip more than one to a soldier.
Wait, I'm sorry. I have to try that pun again. It's a boomerang. Okay, continue.
You're terrible. But so if anybody dies while carrying one of those things, you lose it permanently if you don't like hold the field at the end of the level. But the most useful one, in my opinion, is the throwing axe. Or it's just an axe, but it also grants the soldier carrying it the ability to throw it for free. So it's a free action.
Oh, wow. Yeah, you just always do that, right?
You only can throw it once a level.
Okay, but so potentially less useful.
It's still incredibly useful because it gives you basically two attacks.
Once.
And especially, like I said, with the kings, because they go every action, it doesn't count as an action. So they don't go after you use it.
Okay.
The snipers also get a pistol, which is actually fairly powerful. But the one I think is probably the worst is the boltcaster like rifle, because it has to be reloaded after every shot. It does a lot of damage, but like I said, it has to be reloaded after every single shot.
So, the question is, like, whether or not your damage could be, like, you have to have the damage it does, technically, because you only have to use it every other turn?
You can reload it and fire it, but you can't move. Okay. And XCOM 2 there's so much more movement in XCOM 2. But the Alien Kings are incredibly tough. Like, they show up with 4 armor, and then a bucket load of health. But they made it so that anytime one of them appears, they will stay on the field for a certain amount of time, and then they will bug out.
Like, they just get bored and leave?
Basically, but they maintain the same amount of health they had on the previous level.
That's actually kind of cool. So you can eventually kill them?
Yes. When I actually ended up killing the Viper King, it was by accident, and I didn't realize he was there until the achievement popped up.
So a bit like wandering Pokemon?
A little, I guess.
Yeah, early gen Pokemon that had persistent effects. I think the dogs did in...
they have consistent health bars, is what I'm saying.
But I accidentally killed the Viper King, because he appeared on screen and went out and started to move in, and I had somebody on Overwatch when he had 1 health left, which killed him. And then it was like,
was it Winston?
No.
On Overwatch?
No.
It was McGraw.
Did you see that they basically announced their next hero for that game?
No, I didn't.
Is the healer with the sniper rifle?
Yes.
She can shoot
her teammates to heal them.
Yes, that's awesome.
But XCOM 2, still a really great game. I would still recommend it.
Anything else?
I beat Conquest.
Yay.
Yay. How was compared to other Fire Emblem
games? I enjoyed it. It's harder
than
the other one.
Birthright?
Yeah.
Okay.
And how is it difficulty-wise compared to, let's say, the original? I guess that's our best touch point.
I think it's a bit harder because you don't have
Hector
and Oswin.
Okay.
Your other units don't scale as much, and the casters actually hit harder. So they're hard, and you don't have a good way of dealing with them. That's one problem the Norn units have. They don't have anybody that has particularly high resistances.
Huh.
Like the Hoshido guys have Pegasus Knights, which can tank magic much better. But like I said, heavy infantry like the Knights can just walk through an entire legion, more or less. But the Wolfsingar, which is like their transformer unit, he is a walking beat stick. He's just incredibly powerful.
So when you said beat stick, I actually imagined just like a stick with a bunch of beats stuck onto the end of it.
Yeah.
No, not quite like that.
He transforms into a delicious vegetable stick. and then he kills Mario.
I also played some League of Legends. I got an S rank on Pantheon on a game where I died 16 times.
Was well, it ARAM?
It was, but like I had at least 2 kills, I think, by ulting on top of somebody. His ult, he has like a long channel, and then he lands somewhere on the map and does little damage. But I managed to get a couple of kills by just landing on top of people who were trying to run away from a fight. So I rather enjoyed that. I'm looking forward to our next featured game mode, which is called Nexus Siege. I bought The Sims.
Yeah, I saw that you were playing that the other night.
It's a good time waster, like especially when I'm like, I want to watch something subtitled, but because I want to be able to focus on that, I'm going to play this because I don't actually have to care.
Yeah, and you can basically just set them out about doing tasks and leave. They'll generally take care of themselves.
3's not bad. I think 2's better.
That's generally what I've heard. I only ever really played 2, so I don't know that I really
but
have a good...
But it's not bad. Like I said, I'm having some fun just kind of kicking back.
My problem with games like that is, like, I know there's an optimal path to be taken, and if I'm not taking it, then I feel like I'm wasting the opportunity. It's like Slime Rancher, you could technically just sit around and, like, let everything happen, but I feel if I'm not moving, I'm wasting time.
Anything else?
No, that's pretty much it. So, Jeremy, what have you been up to?
Absolutely nothing.
Wow. I've
been doing a lot of painting a model.
Also a model?
A lot of curmudgeonly old people?
Not even that much of that.
just some of
nothing.
That?
I just haven't really been doing much. I've started playing Fallen London again, but its endgame is not good, so I'm not even sure while I'm doing it.
Oh, I totally forgot about that game.
Yeah,
I never really played it, so...
I never really meant to stop playing it, but I kind of did, so...
I think that's how a lot of those online games, like, you check them once a day, like, because then you end up going, like, 2-3 days without checking on it, and you just fall out of the habit and forget about it.
Yeah, it's really bad when you have to grind and you've already seen all the story that it has to present.
Yeah, I would think after not playing for a little more than a year, they would have had a lot more, but not really.
Hasn't changed a whole lot?
No.
That's unfortunate.
Yeah, disappointing.
Was it you who was playing Sunless Sea?
No.
Okay.
Kevin might have been.
It might have been Kevin or it might have been Ed. I forget which.
That's on my wish list.
Yeah, well, it's made by the people who made Fallen London in the same universe. Apparently, it's not that great, though, because it has a lot of the same problem where you see the same story over and over again because you have to go grind for stuff.
Well, but technically, it's a roguelike, right? So FTL's the same way. You see a lot of the same stuff over and over again.
Yeah, but it's like not as randomly generated as you would expect it to be.
Oh, that's unfortunate.
Like, Spelunky and FTL are roguelikes, but they feel more different every time, apparently, from people who have played both.
What have you been playing, Tyler?
Not Spelunky, I swear. Man, I had a great run where I ended with like 180,000 monies. Unfortunately, I couldn't beat the game, and the only reason I had that much money is because I couldn't find a damn shop to buy bombs at. So I wasted them all in like the first 2 levels and went the entire rest of the game without bombs. It was not fun. Although I did get the crystal knife for the first time ever. Kevin was watching me while I did it. On the first level of the jungle or the ice cave, so that the game goes like mines, jungle, ice cave, temple, and then Olmec's at the end. Although optionally, there's also hell and the alien mothership in between there. But on the first level of the ice cave or the jungle, there's like a pink sticky thing. And if you toss the damsel onto it and then sit there and wait for it, a giant like dune style worm eats you. And the next level you play is going through the intestines of the worm. And at some point you find like a pit filled with stomach acid, and there's a Chris knife from Dune sitting in the bottom of it. And if you pick it up, it replaces your whip. It's great. It does like 5 damage as opposed to your whips 1. The problem is I kept carrying the Danzo around and like putting her down so I could attack an enemy instead of like throwing her at it and potentially like killing her in the process. And this doesn't matter as much with the whip, but you have a little bit of like hitting behind you, and the knife has basically the exact same hitbox and animation, except it's a knife, which makes it look kind of awkward. I feel like one of the Castlevanias did this too. But I'd always catch her a little bit on the, like, overhead back, and because it does so much damage, she just immediately bursts into a pile of blood every time I put her down to try to attack an enemy. Yeah, so I did that, like, 5 or 6 times.
Couldn't you just, like, lob her off in the corner somewhere?
Well, and that's what I was trying to do, but I was in an area where lobbing her off in a corner would cause her to go kill herself as soon as she stood up. So I was trying to, like, be quick about it, like, put her down, jump over, attack something, but I never went quite far enough away from her to avoid hitting her. So, yeah, Spelunky's a fun game. I like that game.
You get to turn women into piles of blood.
You do.
Have you beat women in any other game?
No, not technically. I guess, like, some of the dinosaurs might be. I've been playing more Monster Hunter. I got to the second town, finally. I think this is probably the most I've ever played of any of the Monster Hunter games, which is weird because I feel like I've owned all of them but never played them that much. But, yeah, that's a fun game. I don't know that I have anything new to say about it other than it's a fun game. What have I been playing? There was something actually. Oh, man. So, Pokemon Go, guys. That's what's been consuming all my time. I'm not even sure if it's a game, but I'm doing a lot of whatever it is.
It's not a game. It's a life choice.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, it's definitely a lifestyle game. I think it constitutes a game because that's just a nebulous field.
You know, for as much as this podcast enjoys the Pokemon franchise, you'd think it's odd that only one of us actually has that, but
it's not a Pokemon game. If you like Pokemon for Pokemon games, this is not the game for you. Avoid it, in fact.
Well, I was just going to say it's odd, but then it's really not, because I don't care, because I'm not going to go walking anywhere. I have a car for that, and
you
Jeremy doesn't have a smartphone.
Pokemon.
You could drive to, although the point is to like go explore, like you have to go wander off into the middle of nowhere sometimes. And Jeremy doesn't have a smartphone, so he can't play it.
Or Jeremy would be playing. Jeremy's very curious what Parker looks like vis-a-vis Pokemon.
It's surprisingly barren, actually.
We're in the middle of the Great Plains. That actually stands for a reason.
Here. Well, like, around my house, there's a lot of stuff. So for people who have listened to this podcast for a long time, probably know that I played Ingress forever ago, which is the game made by the company who would eventually make Pokemon Go. They basically just leveraged the entire database and said, guess what? All these things from Ingress are now Pokemon things. I think Pokemon Go is a clear improvement over the original, if only because there's more stuff to do. Because in Ingress, you would go to a portal and do stuff with the portal, and then you were done. And there wasn't a whole lot to do one way or the other. Pokemon Go gives you, like, I'm going to go hunt this Pokemon. Or, like, every time you get to a portal, there's a chance there's a Pokemon there as well. So there's more to do. I guess the world that they're creating in it is more dense. I was going to say, I think Monday or Tuesday night of this week, we're out at a park near my house, and there were like 20 people hanging around at like 10:30 at night at this park, just like sitting around catching Pokemon next to a gym. It was really weird. Like, random strangers were just talking to each other about Pokemon. One of them was lamenting not bringing their DS with them. I'm like, you should have. I've got mine. Street passes. So, like, it's weird.
It's cool. I wish I was part of this event. Although I don't know if that would really happen where I live.
You might be surprised.
I might.
I mean, just try going out to a park relatively near your house in the middle of the night and see if you
pretend I have a smartphone.
Well, yeah.
Catch a Pikachu.
I think this game would not have been nearly like someone was like, you know what? We should launch this game in summer. And that was a good choice because I don't think it would have done nearly as well not in summer.
It probably wouldn't have jumped off quite as much if it had come out in the winter when everybody is like, go outside to catch Pokemon? No, it's way too freaking cold.
And you can stay out late, I think is the other, like, it's summer vacation.
Free time.
So lots, you know, kids who are in school aren't in school.
Technically, you can stay out late anyway.
Well, yeah, but it's like cold and dark in the summer. It stays lighter and warmer.
Yeah,
longer.
But it's cold and dark all the time in winter here.
Yeah, exactly, which is why winter would be a terrible season to do it.
What's the coolest Pokemon you've caught?
Coolest? Man, I don't have very many cool Pokemon. I guess my Hypno is kind of cool, I guess. He's not great. His name's Cuvier. The rarest Pokemon I've caught is a Magmar. I found him last night, actually. I was just like wandering around like, there's a Magmar right there.
Magmar is decently cool.
Yeah, Magmar's kind of lame, honestly. I'm not a huge fan of Magmar. Electabuzz, though. Electabuzz's Bamp. I do have a Vaporeon.
That's cool.
So the way Pokemon work in this game they don't gain experience. Every Pokemon you catch, you get Stardust and some candy for that species' evolutionary tree, and you expend some of that to power them up, or you expend a huge amount of just the candy to evolve them. Like, Pidgey only take 12 candy, which is 4 Pidgey. Every Pokemon you catch gives you 3 of that tree's candy. Everyone you hatch gives you 10, and you can trade in extras to the professor, who's apparently like some sort of weird collector guy, for 1 apiece. It's really weird because all the character models in this are like, they're all wearing like compression-fitting clothing and stuff, like there's some sort of health nuts. It's really weird. In order to evolve Pokemon, you have to go and catch a crap ton of the base form. So I've got like 5 Raticates and like 12 Pidgeots, because guess what the most common Pokemon are?
Doduo.
Rats and pigeons?
Yep. Pretty much everywhere.
So rats and flying rats.
There aren't a ton of snakes.
I've only caught 1 Ekans, and I actually had to go way off trail to find it. I was actually kind of disappointed that I couldn't find this, because I was interested if they had like tiled various areas differently, because they actually recognize bodies of water in the game, and water Pokemon show up near bodies of water, but not near them. So that was kind of a cool touch, and I was wondering if they actually, like, geographically divided different areas.
I think they just know where water is, and that's an easy one.
Yeah, but I was, like, wondering if rock Pokemon were way more common in the mountains or something.
Or if fire Pokemon are way more common in Colorado, when it's on fire.
Exactly.
Well, Colorado's either flooding or on fire, although not this year.
The border is on fire.
Yeah. Oh, okay, so something's on fire.
But I was hoping to find, like, a regional map or something, but no one's apparently made this yet.
Yeah, so. I was looking for one just out of curiosity, but...
Although it does make me wonder what kind of stuff is over at Cherry Creek. Probably not very much.
Possibly. I saw some Staryus near,
There might be some cool Poliwhirls.
Yeah. I've only ever seen the silhouette of a Poliwag. It is a surprisingly compelling game. I mean, it helps that Alex is into it. I probably wouldn't do nearly as much of it otherwise. But she likes doing the whole, like, walking and exercising thing, so I go with her because, hey, Pokemon. But, like, we've talked to a bunch of random strangers. I've, like, met people and know their names. I've talked to them more than once because we go out to the same place at night. It's really weird.
Never trust a rando.
It's like humans are actually social animals or something.
Well, no, we aren't.
The weird thing, though, is, like, it's all the... like all these nerds that would never actually meet because, like me, they're probably at home playing video games most of the time. And suddenly we're all outside. It's strange.
And that's when people who actually work at the U.S. Census go, there's not that many people here.
Anything else?
The vast majority of my time this week has been devoted to Pokemon Go and work. So some combination thereof. So no, not really.
Pokemon Go at work?
A little? So, weird coincidence. I actually work with a guy who went to mines in the same degree as me in the same years. We never met each other. Huh. We all know all the same people. I had heard of his name maybe vaguely once, but somehow we had never met before. Anyway, so yeah, Pokemon Go. That's what I've been playing, if you can call that playing.
Go...
So speaking of crazes, this week we played Dragon Quest, or Dragon Warrior, if you prefer. And I've been saying we need to play this game for a while now, because it's very influential. And I'd played it before very briefly, but definitely when I had a less critical eye, when I knew less about video games historically and as an art. And really, playing this game was kind of a revelation to me. We have a list, as you know, if you listen to this podcast, where we rank every video game we play, sort of on a combination of how fun they are and how important they are. I think fun is definitely more important than importance. If the two combined were the only factor, I think Doom would be at the top of the list, because it is the most fun, important game we've played. This is one of the most important games we've played, if not the most important. But I think it is the least fun, important game we've played. Certainly the least fun game that is this important.
Simon's Quest
less is...
less fun
is
than Mortal Kombat.
I don't think Mortal Kombat is important.
Yeah, because they were just copying other games. So.
Like, imagine video games without Mortal Kombat.
Like, what would have changed in the history of video games?
Like, would GTA 3 have been slightly more controversial?
It played a major part of the ESRB's formation.
That is true.
It did, but that would have happened without that, I think. We still had Night Trap.
Yeah, they almost brought it up because of Doom, honestly.
Yeah, that still would have happened. It might have been delayed.
Someone would have pushed that envelope.
But playing Dragon Warrior, I instantly saw how you get from Ultima to Dragon Warrior, and I saw how you get from Dragon Warrior to Final Fantasy and The Legend of Zelda, and all the way out to Grand Theft Auto 3 and Mass Effect and stuff we have today. I instantly saw why this game took off so well in Japan, and I also instantly saw why Nintendo of America literally had to give away copies to get anybody to play it.
They had to give copies away?
There was a theory Nintendo had, and to be fair, this theory did pan out, that because JRPGs were so big in Japan and the American market was so much larger, the first publisher to make a JRPG work in America was going to make a ton of money. And so obviously Nintendo wanted to be this publisher. They had a whole bunch of copies of Dragon Warrior that nobody bought, so they decided to give them out with subscriptions to their magazine Nintendo Power as a, like, first one's free sort of situation.
How did that actually, like, was Dragon Warrior ever popular in America?
No.
Okay.
Never.
Yeah, I mean, there's a reason for that. But
even when we got the good ones, when we didn't get that many of the good ones. So yeah, Dragon Warrior, arguably the first JRPG. It's definitely arguable because they had, like, Ultima knockoffs. It's the first console RPG.
So
unless you want to count adventure.
It's got, like, the most generic fantasy plotline. King is like, my daughter has been kidnapped by Dragon King.
Go save her.
Save her?
But even that isn't as cliche as most video games, because after you rescue the princess, there's more game.
That is true.
And a lot of people thought that was a big deal at the time. Like, the story for this game could not be more simple, but there is a story in a way that even Super Mario Brothers, with their your princesses in another castle, doesn't have.
I guess that's true. I never really thought about it.
I mean, even Donkey Kong and Pac-Man, which have stories, sort of, are super straightforward, get the girl slash eat the ghosts. Stories. This one has turns. They're not super interesting turns. They're okay, now you've accomplished this goal, go do this goal. But it's sort of divided into three acts, like a basic structure.
And there are, like, lots of NPCs, which is actually kind of weird for this time, because, like,
well, yes and no.
Flavor.
The creator of this game was most well known for a series of games that I cannot remember the names of, but they were basically detective adventure stories.
Oh, yeah.
Which
I
became a
those
huge genre in Japan. And they never really came over to the U.S. because by the time games were coming over to the U.S., JRPGs were a bigger concern. But those are full with NPCs and flavor and stuff, so it makes sense to convert them. And even, like, the menu-based combat they went with obviously draws from Ultima, but draws a lot from those as well.
Yeah, I was going to say, I've actually played some of those, now that I think about it, and they're actually pretty good.
So yeah, this is sort of marrying that to more gameplay. Unfortunately, not very much or very good gameplay.
So if you've
a lot
ever,
of grinding.
If you've ever played a JRPG, this is pretty typical. There's turn-based combat. You wander around, a monster will pop up randomly. You have the option to fight it, or to cast a spell at it, or to run away. I think there's a fourth option, but I don't actually remember what it
use is. Use your item.
Okay, so you can use items in combat. Are there any combat items that are worth using?
Not
I never
that
got
I
that
recall,
far.
But, like, even what you're probably imagining is way more complicated in this game. There's almost no strategy to the turn-based battles. It's almost entirely, are you a higher level? Do you have enough hit points? You will make it through this battle.
Which encourages this game's primary form of play, grinding for experience and money to get more powerful.
And it hasn't gotten any more fun in the intervening years.
Oh, it's gotten so much more fun. I will fight you on that.
Yeah, Final Fantasy X is a great game. That's
Pokemon is a great game.
Yeah, Pokemon
is still
is a
terrible,
great game.
And grinding is still boring.
Yeah, some people like grinding.
But grinding is a
Those
state of mind.
Those people are weird.
This game is way more grindy than probably what anyone is imagining when we say grindy. Because you're usually literally fighting the same enemy in the same configuration with the same attacks over and over again.
Yeah, I got reasonably far in this game, like maybe 2 or 3, maybe even 4 hours in, and I only encountered up to, like, I think 7 or 8 different types of enemies, and they already got into palette swaps by that point.
And keep in mind, though, even that was kind of revolutionary at the time, because we're coming right out of the era where video games want to kill you to get your next quarter. Video games on console are still kind of figuring out how they're going to work. And they're still pretty hard, because that's how you make games longer.
Since they didn't have to kill you for your quarter anymore, they already had all your money.
Yeah.
Well, but now it was about they wanted to make the experience worth the money you paid for. They wanted to make it last. And because they had a limited space to fit a game in there, the easiest way to do that was to make it a hard game, so you had to practice a lot to beat it.
Which is also a lot more difficult, to make a game that you feel is worth the money you paid for it.
Yeah, this game tries to make a game that anyone can beat if they just keep at it. The developer I should say designer, compared it to like climbing a mountain. It's a lot of work and it's not exactly fun each step. But at the end, you know, you've accomplished something and hopefully you get to see a pretty sunset.
Man, that is definitely this game.
I can appreciate the motto, but I think it's a terrible motto.
Well, yep. I've said 1,000 times I will take a hard game over a boring game, right? That's like my motto on this podcast. That said, that is kind of the way video games went, right? Most video games this day are meant to be able to be beaten if you just keep throwing your head at them.
I meant more along the lines of, this isn't going to be fun to reach the end. I'm playing a game because I want to have fun. I'm not playing a game because I want to do work. If I wanted to do work, I'd go to one of my 2 jobs.
Yeah, but like, that wasn't... It was new. They didn't really know what the hell they were doing.
Yeah, it's certainly a more friendly approach, right? Shigeru Miyamoto, when he was making The Legend of Zelda, said, that game was boring and anyone could beat it. I want to make a game of that that's actually a challenge and fun. And that's a different philosophy. It's a philosophy I like more, but I think this is the philosophy of video games that ended up winning. How many games have scrapped interesting features to make them more appealing to the masses or easier?
That's true. I mean, like, Bejeweled is one of the most popular games of all time. I find it so boring.
I think everybody should be able to beat the game and not be blocked off by something or other, but I do enjoy a challenge.
So I'm not necessarily sure I agree with that, but...
Yeah, because, like, what's the point of beating something anybody can beat?
Well, I guess doing it in a way no one else can do.
Yeah.
I mean, that's speedrunning, right?
Yeah, or challenge runs. But this game's philosophy kind of ended up winning. That said, I think most games' minute-to-minute gameplay is more engaging.
Way more compelling. To be fair, I kind of got into a weird zen state with this. I was playing it, and Alex was like, I can't believe you're still playing this game. I don't know what's wrong with me, but I'm still doing it.
Which thing are you thinking of being wrong with you? Because there's a lot.
All right, but kind of backing up a bit, I wanted to talk about the different versions of this game. Because the version you're going to play today, probably, if you want to go out and get this, which I don't think any of us recommend. But if you want to see a piece of history, it's an incredibly interesting piece of history, I think. You're probably going to play
the... No, it's not.
I think it's super interesting. Well, I don't think it's fun. I think it's interesting. I think you should read an essay on it, not play it. But if you want to see for yourself, there are certain people that learn by doing. You're probably going to play the iOS or Android version, which has a lot of stuff stripped out. No one is going to be playing the original version unless you speak Japanese, because this was originally a cartridge game before battery backup was invented, which means this is originally a game you saved with passwords.
Oh, whoa. God.
Also, they improved the graphics for the North American version,
which I assume is the version we played. That's the NES version on the Virtual Console.
Yeah, well, there isn't one on the Virtual Console.
Oh, how... What did you play then?
I pirated it. I thought I had a Game Boy version. I couldn't find mine.
I have Game Boy version.
Yeah.
That has 1 and 2 on it.
Okay.
If you're playing the original NES version, there's a stair command, by which I mean when you walk into stairs, unlike most RPGs, you don't automatically go down them. You have to press start, go over to stair, and then you'll go up or down the stairs, which is very much like Ultima, which is an old computer RPG. But, I mean, the convenience of just walking in the stairs is so good.
That's a couple more inputs than I really need to do to go up or down a flight of stairs.
And if you just stand around for a while, the menu will come up. And then you have to like press a button to make the menu go away. And then you walk over and like, I want to talk to this person. And then you have to bring the menu over and talk to the person. And then man, this game likes its menus. Wow. They're everywhere. It's so slogging. Like, I immediately pulled this game up. I'm like, I have a stair command. Like, the first 5 minutes, I had a really hard time forcing myself to get through.
It's archaic, but it is, like, the first, like, sort of trying to hammer it in, how does this work on a console sort of thing. And Ultima is pretty archaic like that, too. Ultima has a stair command.
Yep.
Arguably, Ultima has a stair command for a reason. Although, also, arguably, that reason doesn't justify it.
What's the reason in that one?
Like, so that you can check stairs instead of going up them for, like, hidden switches or whatever. Or for traps. So there's a chance that if you just go up the stairs without looking at them, a fireball will go off. Which I don't think Dragon Warrior has anything like that.
Ah.
Yeah, I think they might have thought it was like too disorienting to walk into a staircase and suddenly be transported in this game. Like, it seems so obvious now, but like way back when...
That's how my version worked. I just had to walk over the stairs and I went up or down.
It's a much better idea.
Yeah. If you play the Game Boy version, it'll just work like that. Although, that's a thing, the difference between one of the localization differences is in Japan, Japanese fans of Dragon Warrior, for whatever reason, still insist on keeping the stair command in. It's important to them. They take it out of every release everywhere else. But for whatever reason, Japanese fans want the power to go start stairs.
That's just weird.
Thanks, Japan.
That's just busy work.
Yeah, it is. And a lot of this game feels like busy work. It feels like climbing a mountain. I'm not really having fun right now, and the scenery isn't that great most of the time. But hey, there's a scorpion over there.
What kind of mountains are you climbing?
There are scorpions in Colorado. We've got little wood scorpions.
Really?
Yeah.
I didn't think we had scorpions here.
But I can see sort of why this game took off in Japan, and that reason is Akira Toriyama, who, if you don't know, we've mentioned him before, the artist slash writer of Dragon Ball and Dragon Ball Z. This game would have come out a few years into Dragon Ball, so after he's done with Dr. Slump, arguably when he's at his biggest in Japan, he's going to get bigger internationally after that. But he's a huge name. The programmer slash lead designer of this game had a column about video games in Shonen Jump. If you don't know what Shonen Jump is, it's the most important document in your life if you're a Japanese child. And you get it every month or week. You get it every week because Japan is the land of good things. And the person who did the music was like a famous composer for movies and advertisements who was just like, I want to do video games.
So they went all out.
Put me
out
of video games. Well, it's kind of like Chrono Trigger, where it's just these three people happen to... I mean, a little bit of its collusion, where this guy writing an article in Shonen Jump got Akira Toriyama's information because he worked for the same company and was like, draw slimes for me!
Prefer the slimes are awesome.
Wasn't the slime initially a placeholder?
No, I don't think so. I haven't read anything like that.
That would be awesome, though.
I thought I saw somewhere that the slime was initially just a placeholder enemy that grew on everybody.
That's possible.
But that could be something else, because that happens with a lot of things where it's like, this is a placeholder until we get the actual artwork for it.
On a red slime. What? How were slimes a popular enemy? Is this the game that made
it? Yeah, like, it is. It's just that design. It's cute, right? It's cool. Akira Toriyama earned his paycheck on this game.
Yeah, well, like, the Dragon Warrior slime is super iconic, but, like, were slimes a generic RPG enemy before this?
Well, keep in mind, Ultima varied Dungeons & Dragons based. They're drawing a lot from Dungeons & Dragons for this. You know, gelatinous cubes are, but I don't know that Akira Toriyama had ever played Dungeons & Dragons, so he was like, yeah, draw a slime, and that's what he drew.
And gelatinous cube is considerably less adorable.
Yeah, generally a cube, generally filled with rotting detritus, not super cute. No eyes.
No mouth to smile with.
Well, yeah.
It's got eyes and a smile, but they're not actually
Smile is maybe not the right word. It has mouth parts, probably.
That's the only expression a skull can make.
And they don't have much room for enemy art on that cartridge, so palette swaps happen pretty quick. So not only is slime the first thing you're going to fight.
Probably red slime is the second thing you're going to fight.
I actually fought a red slime first.
They have like one more health and are worth one more experience.
But like things this game kind of does well is it feels open and big for the time. You go play it now, it doesn't at all. But that world map feels pretty big, and it's pretty open to you. This game predates The Legend of Zelda, and it doesn't really signpost at all, which is kind of a bad thing if you want to get through the game, but it gives you the feeling that you can go anywhere.
And you really can. The only thing that's going to prevent you is being slaughtered by monsters. But you could technically go anywhere and just run away from everything.
Well, even if you get slaughtered by monsters, you lose half your gold and reappear in front of the king, who's like, well, you died, but I'm going to give you a second chance. So is this king really just a king, or is this guy a freaking god? If he's a god, why does he need you?
He's chained to his room.
Yeah, it's a god of very limited power.
He's got his feet nailed to the floor.
So the retry cost is very low. It's basically the same as in Pokemon. Even as the game goes on, though, it's not so big that that's...
Half of your money?
That's true.
So much wasted time. You need that money for
climb
a hand
that mountain.
Axe.
Fall down that mountain, you gotta climb back up.
But if you die, then you have to grind to get your money back. Therefore, you're gaining more experience.
That is true.
Less likely to die in the future.
And I think the levels are more important than the equipment. But
and going back to that, like, the thing that's going to stop you from going to an area you shouldn't be is getting beat up. I think that drives curiosity in a really good way. You don't really have the graphical power to, like, show someone an area that they want to go to and show them something cool to make them want to go there. But if you let them go there and beat them up for it, it can create that feeling of, I want to get strong enough to go where the red slimes hang out.
Because I want to know what's down there, damn it.
Yeah, and to be fair, I did have some of that. And even though this game doesn't have great signposting, it doesn't say, like, you need to go to this area and do this thing, it kind of funnels you by, like, making sure that the you can't go anywhere where the monsters are too powerful. So it kind of forces you to only be in the area where the monsters are of the right level for you. But there is a little bit of Guy Danit moment. Like, did you have to find the fairy flute ever?
I don't think I got that far this playthrough.
There is a town where you had to, like, go find a fairy flute. And they're like, it's lost somewhere in the town. Somewhere. The town...
You have to check everywhere?
It's 100 by 100 squares. You have to pretty much just check all of them. It turns out it's, like, right next to the fountain. So it's, like, one of the obvious spots to start searching. But if you chose a bad spot to start searching, you have to, like, walk, open menu, choose... Look, walk, open menu, choose look, wait for the NPC to move out of the way so that you can go to the cell they're standing in. It doesn't do that very much, but the dungeons are a whole nother story.
So, I don't know if I said this on mics or off. I think it was off mics. But there's this company you may have heard of called Squaresoft.
Yeah.
Never heard of them.
They were about to go out of business because they only made terrible ripoffs of other people's video games like King's Knight. So they decided...
Wait, what was King's Knight a ripoff of?
Any vertical shooter.
Okay.
So they decided they were going to do a ripoff of Dragon Warrior because it was so popular.
It couldn't possibly be any worse.
And they knew it was going to be their last game because they had no money, so they jokingly called it Final Fantasy because it was going to be their final, you know...
Yeah, the final game, and it's a fantasy game.
But no one can make a Dragon Warrior game worse than the original Dragon Quest, so it became immensely popular and awesome. And we've... played. Zach wasn't on the podcast at that point, but we played Final Fantasy, and there was stuff to like there that we genuinely liked. The problem with Final Fantasy is a technical problem that the machine can't quite handle everything they want it to.
Yeah, the combat is actually way more interesting.
Yeah, but Final Fantasy is just so much better a game than Dragon Quest, and we rated Final Fantasy pretty mediocrely.
That is true.
So do we have anything final to say on Dragon Quest, Dragon Warrior, before we put it on our list?
Oh, yeah. We didn't even get to the dungeons. I have a whole rant about the dungeons.
Go for it.
I hate having to buy my gear. I want basic gear to start with.
Yeah, I feel like nothing is basic gear, although you're obviously... Actually, I really liked it when you bought a sword. Suddenly your sprite had a sword. Your sprite does change when you don't have anything and then have something. That's like really the only nice piece they added. So dungeons are basically the way you progress the plot. They feel very different from everything else. You need an item. It's called, unsurprisingly, a torch. If you do not have it, you can only see in like a 3-square radius centered on you.
A little bit like Pokemon without Flash?
Yeah. Unfortunately, using a torch only increases the radius you can see in by like 1 block in any direction around you.
You also get a light spell later that lights up the entire screen.
Oh,
but
it takes
MP. So, like, in the final areas, you really don't want to use it.
No, I'm okay with that. I'd use it. So,
you got to grind some more so you can get that MP to fight the final boss.
So, basically, every dungeon is dark. You need a torch to see through it. The monsters are usually a slightly stronger variant of what you fought above ground. It actually got to the point where I would go train above ground right next to the entrance until I was strong enough to beat everything there in about 1 or 2 hits. And then I'd enter the dungeon and do that, and then, like, make my way back to town over and over, because that's how this game works. But you enter a dungeon, you can't see anything. Even with the torch, it doesn't really help that much, so I ended up just using right wall following, and that ended up working more or less alright. I got all the items out of up to 2 dungeons, but man, those are horrible. If only because there's so much lack of information. You enter an area, you have no idea what you're looking for in that area, and you had to wander around for a while. The first one's alright, you find a tablet of, like, your ancestor saying, "You're my descendant, go do stuff." And you're like, what if some random asshole had found this? But
they weren't the hero, therefore they couldn't have found it.
The problem is the second dungeon actually has 3 unique items in it, and you're not really sure which one is the correct one, so you found an item. Do I leave this hellhole, or do I continue searching? I mean, the answer is you continue searching, because that's just how this game is. But they're painful. Actively painful to wander through. The world map is not nearly as bad.
Is it just painful, though, because of the random encounters popping up and getting in your way, and causing basically a break in the exploration?
No, actually, I prefer the random... Like, the random encounters popping up are a pleasant break from the... I'm not even sure I could call it exploration, because it's, like, literally wandering blind in a cave. It's not fun.
I feel like this is the era where they kind of expected you to draw maps, though.
That is maybe true, and it didn't even occur to me that I did that with Metroid. Didn't even occur to me to do it with this game.
It has never occurred to me to draw a map of anything.
But, like, on one hand, I can see that. On the other hand, I think that is a terrible idea, but it totally fits with this game's ethos. So
there actually is one more thing I wanted to talk about on this game, which is it's one of the first games with multiple endings.
Oh,
really?
Really?
Yeah, when you reach the final boss, he's like, join me, and we can totally beat people up. And you can say yes, and then the game just ends.
Well, neat.
Or you can beat him up and get the good ending.
Where you save the world or something?
Or like, something.
The Dragon Lord seems like a pretty cool guy. I would hang out with him.
He's not as good as Dr. Agon, who I think is in Dragon Quest IV.
Dr. Agon.
Or nice. Dragon Quest V, which is the game where you're not the hero. And like you go and get the like hero's lineage thing, and you can't use it, and it doesn't work because you're not the hero.
That's awesome.
That is actually
That's
pretty
a good
cool.
subversion, actually.
There are some really cool things that later Dragon Quest games do. And actually, I think there were, like, if you just compare it to games around its time, cool things this Dragon Quest does, but man, does it not hold up.
Yeah, and I've heard that other Dragon Quest games are actually pretty good, but like everyone says it starts at like 3 is where you should start playing.
3 is the only one I've beaten, and I really like 3, but 3 is like Final Fantasy, and I don't know if it's as good as Final Fantasy or Final Fantasy 3.
Well, I mean, which Final Fantasy 3?
The real Final Fantasy 3.
Okay, I've never actually played that one.
You played 5?
Yeah.
5 is a remake of 3.
Okay, I did not know that.
It's not officially a remake of 3, but it's basically the same story, very similar mechanics. 5 just has a lot more job classes and better ones.
I have played 3 then, because I remember getting confused, because I thought I had played it because the beginning is very similar, but it didn't, like, there were scenes I remembered from the first one that never happened in the second one. So, that explains a lot. Anyway.
Yeah, Dragon Quest 3 is cool because you have the Goof-Off class. Which doesn't do anything, but is the only one who can become a sage, which is like a red mage, but it gets access to all the black and white spells and armor.
Awesome.
Yeah.
So it's clearly the superior class.
So it's but you have to start it out as a class that literally does nothing in combat. You can't, it's like a Magikarp you can't control.
Wow.
Speaking very vaguely.
You could make a party of 3 of those and 1 guy and go extra hard mode.
That is true. Although, I assume they had to be alive to get experience.
Yep.
Yeah, man.
But anyway, we didn't play Dragon Quest III. So any other final thoughts on Dragon Quest before we go ahead and try to put it on the
I don't think so.
List.
I got nothing.
It sure was an electronic experience.
I mean,
it was boring.
I said I don't recommend this game, and that's true. I don't think I could in person recommend it to anyone. But if you're a person who's interested in video game history, I genuinely think it is one of the most important games you can play. So give it a cursory look. Play it for as long as you can bear. But don't, like, force yourself to play it longer.
I would arguably say even just watch a Let's Play of it, because I think that almost gives you the same experience. Or even, like, I think read about it is actually the best answer, because I read some articles about it, and honestly, that was about as good as playing the game for me, so...
All right, so we have a list on our website at www.lasttimeonvideogames.com ranking all the games we've played. Number 1 is Chrono Trigger, a much better game involving a lot of the guys in this one. Bottom of the list at 162, still Golden Axe. That's another game with fantasy axes. In the middle is Excitebike once more. All right, so where do we want to start this one? Shall we start at the bottom RPG we have, which is Phantasy Star?
Yeah, sure.
Phantasy Star has a lot more interesting, like... ideas, I think. They have the, like, try to talk to enemies thing. They have a more interesting setting.
They're both terribly signposted.
Yes.
Yeah.
They both have the problem of the first thing you want to do is grind a bunch so you're strong enough to go to the next area. The key difference, the thing I think puts Dragon Warrior ahead, I guess 2 things. One is the art by Akira Toriyama I genuinely think is good. And I think the music is better in Dragon Quest than in Phantasy Star as well. Though it's
that
been so long
true.
Since I've played Phantasy Star, I might have been making that up a little. That said, the thing I really think puts it apart is Dragon Quest's legacy. Dragon Quest gives us Final Fantasy and The Legend of Zelda and a ton of stuff that I don't...
And Phantasy Star, arguably.
Yes, and Phantasy Star.
I don't normally like to go with giving games position based on later installments, but I think you're right in this case.
Okay, so next RPG on the list. Oh, man, this is going to be tough. Final Fantasy Dumb American Version. A.K.A. Final Fantasy Mystic Quest.
Oh, man, I forgot about that game. Oh,
Mystic Quest.
Oh,
so Mystic
God.
Quest has that, like, interesting Pokemon stuff, right? Where you get an axe and that makes you super effective against trees
and it gets trees. And you get claws, which poison people, I guess. And yeah, man.
And it's certainly signposted better. You have a party.
Almost too much better.
But man, do I not want to put Dragon Quest under it. Like, just like on principle.
I think Dragon Quest, working with the tools that it had, is better than the game that is trying to hold your hand the entire time. I mean, they feel the same. You're grinding either way. Yeah, it's just Mystic Quest is just like, we're adding in a whole bunch of other stuff for arbitrary reasons.
Well, it's like the difference between an arduous trek up a mountain or like being carried in a divan up
it's
a mountain.
It's a really bad tour guide taking you up a mountain in a gondola, and he keeps stopping to talk to his friends.
That's a much, much more apt comparison, I think.
So I have to scroll up a lot higher than I expected to find something that's comparable again. How do we think it compares to Zelda 2, The Adventure of Link? Because here is where I think it starts to hit a wall.
I really don't like Zelda 2, but I think it's a bit better.
It's hard, but hard in a way that is technically overcomable. I like the combat. It's not great, but
we wouldn't have Zelda 2 without Dragon Warrior. We wouldn't have Zelda without Dragon Warrior. And ironically, Zelda 2 is like, okay, but make it more like Dragon Warrior now. That said, I pretty much agree. The combat, there's more skill to it. There's a little more interest in the areas you can go.
I think this is sufficiently diverged that while it probably would have not existed as soon without Dragon Warrior, it is no longer Dragon Warrior.
Okay, so just a few down, Tyler, how do we think it compares to ActRaiser?
Man, I really want to like ActRaiser more than I do.
I hadn't noticed based on it.
Because of the way we rank this list, certain games get trapped in certain spots that maybe they don't belong. I think ActRaiser is probably a little lower than it deserves to be, but
it's a cool idea. It's just
not a good game.
The
problem is that execution is just really leaves a lot to be desired.
I actually think I prefer Dragon Warrior over ActRaiser because ActRaiser is occasionally actively... Well, I was going to say that, then I remembered having to slog through dungeons in Dragon Quest.
Yeah, but I was going to say, really? Because I definitely feel like I prefer ActRaiser. They're both trying to do stuff. Again, ActRaiser is a game that wouldn't exist without Dragon Warrior, but
I mean, the platforming's okay.
Yeah,
so
the boss fighting is awful, though.
Yeah, and the like real-time strategy thing is actually weirdly compelling sometimes, but not very good. Okay, I think your half-hearted argument has swayed me.
Okay,
so
how do we think it compares to the only point-and-click adventure on the list, The Secret of Monkey Island?
How does it compare to Monkey Island? I think it's better than Monkey Island because I like actively doing something instead of pointing and clicking and telling it to do something. Like and this game doesn't feel as much as though that's what you're doing, despite the fact that that's what you're doing in every game. Monkey Island was trying to coast on a sense of
comedy
humor,
writing, basically. Yeah.
But this one is trying to just be the slog, and they both felt like a slog to me, so I'd rather go with the high fantasy one that...
Yeah, like, Monkey's Island's puzzles aren't super great.
They're also just...
Moon logic-y.
Yeah, what's the logic behind this?
Not all of them, but yeah, a lot of them are. I don't know. We also... Well, I at least played the like remade version with better graphics, so I don't know that it's a super fair comparison, but man, I really like the sword fighting, which is not at all sword fighting.
That's true. A lot of the things Monkey Island does, I feel like it does better than Dragon Quest, but at the same time, my instinct is to put Dragon Quest above it. I'm not really sure why.
I think the biggest thing is that Monkey Island falls flat.
Yeah.
Anymore, and I don't know that...
Dragon Quest falls pretty flat, too, though, if we're being honest.
Okay, that's true. I guess I went into it with higher expectations for Monkey Island and very low expectations for Dragon Quest. I'm having a hard time with that one. I think I would probably give it to Dragon Quest, if only because the only person who ever did anything else with Monkey Island was the guy who made Monkey Island.
Yeah, I think that's a very tepid above Monkey Island.
Yeah. Only barely.
So let's see. Halfway between Monkey Island and ActRaiser is Alleyway.
They feel very similar to me, actually.
Yeah, but Dragon Quest has that influence, right? And the better art. So you have to give it to Dragon Quest?
Yeah.
And it's slightly more complex.
So there we have Wave Race 64. Is that the point it goes at?
That's a weird point. I mean...
I think it goes there.
I could honestly be talked into either direction. Wave Race 64 was a surprisingly solid game, but...
I wasn't here for Wave Race 64 and wanted it to go higher. There's a weird thing where Thief is right above Wave Race, and I want Dragon Warrior above Thief, but I don't think I can.
Do you?
Yes, I do.
Really?
I don't think I can, in good conscience, say it's better than Wave Race, though. I don't think I actually believe that.
Well, yeah, it's a weird block, though, because we have Thief and Wave Race. And
right above that is ActRaiser. Well, though, Thief and ActRaiser together kind of makes sense. And above that is F-Zero. And
I meant more of Wave Race's cock blocking Jeremy from putting Dragon Warrior above Thief.
To be fair, we're already higher on Dragon Warrior than I thought it was going to go.
Really? Is it above Final Fantasy?
No.
Okay, well, I'm pretty sure I can agree with that.
No, there's no way out. Final Fantasy is number 75. We're right now looking at about number 108. If it goes below Wave Race, it'll be 110.
I mean, like I said, I could be argued in either direction. I really didn't think Wave Race was that great of a game. It was just a really mediocre but fairly solid.
It's competent. I would recommend it to people, not to everyone, but
okay,
to more people than I would recommend Dragon Quest.
Like, now that I'm thinking about Dragon Quest, maybe I develop Stockholm Syndrome for it, because I kind of want to play
game's
it
goal,
now that we're
right?
talking about
that's
it.
The game's
goal. Stockholm Syndrome and its players.
Yeah, to get you to invest enough time that you feel like you want to invest more.
It's sunk cost fallacy the game.
Yeah, in a way.
Oh, God.
And then it gets into this weird arms race with Final Fantasy, and then it does the game where you're a merchant.
Was that Dragon Quest?
No, Dragon Quest IV has sort of a Dragon Age Origins thing going on, where before you start the game, you play a bunch of short stories as the party members. And
okay,
then you start playing as the hero and you collect the party members. And one of the party members is a merchant, so his like backstory is just you going to dungeons to get treasure to sell to adventurers. And you have like a family and stuff.
Well, I'll give it to Wave Race. I know.
Okay. So Dragon Quest / Warrior, whichever you prefer, goes at number 110 above Alleyway, below Wave Race.
Fun.
Alleyway. That's a remarkably
I actually
comparison.
Played Alleyway yesterday.
Really?
Yeah. I had my DS and nothing to do.
I bought the original Pokemon Red Blue Yellow generation for the DS because it's on sale yesterday.
I have a blue, I think.
I also bought blue.
But it's beaten, so. All right. So that does it for this week. Tyler, what are we going to play next week?
So I feel like it's been a while since we played a game where you like walk forward and punch someone.
It's because those games tend to suck more than you want them to.
That is true.
Wait, those are supposed to be games?
Yeah, they're not just life simulators.
That explains the dirty looks I get from people at work.
I thought you said you weren't playing Pokemon Go.
No, I'm walking forward and punching people. I'm not catching Pokemon.
No, you catch Pokemon by punching them in the face and stealing your Team Rocket.
You're a member of Team... what was the one that hated capturing Pokemon? Oh, I didn't play that game.
It's in black and white, right?
Team PETA.
Team PETA.
The makers of Pokemon Black and Blue.
So you thought that, I'm like, Team PETA, their rival team, Hummus.
So what are we going to play?
River City Ransom.
Another game with RPG elements, another game considered a classic. Hopefully it's more fun. I get to make more Yusuke Urameshi jokes.
Yay!
Next,
Spirit of the Shotgun.
Yeah, next time on Last Time, I wish he'd use Spirit Wave more often.
This has been a production of Last Time on Video Games, copyright 2016. All the video games and other media mentioned within are copyright their respective owners. Past episodes and other information can be found at www.lasttimeonvideogames.com. If you'd like to contact us, you can reach us by email at ltovg@lasttimeonvideogames.com. We're also on iTunes and would really appreciate it if you left us a 5-star review. Podcast over. You have to go to the start screen and load your last save again.